Welcome to episode 323 of After the Credits. I am one of your co-hosts, Marina Antunes, joined today by fellow co-hosts.
Steve Stebbing.
Hilarious.
Crickets.
It's like waiting. I don't want to step on anybody's voice. I don't want to step anyone's name.
Okay, I'm making an executive decision. Steve goes second.
Okay.
There we go. Done
for next time. I'm sure I will forget, so we may need to remind. Welcome to another episode of the show where we talk about stuff that we've been watching, and the movie of the week is Alien Romulus.
Yes. I feel like I might be higher on this than everyone else.
I'm not sure about that. Bill and I already exchanged some text messages about this. And he's like, I think you and Steve liked this more than I did.
Yeah, I definitely dug this one. It's Fede playing in his Evil Dead Don't Breathe sandbox. And lesser towards the girl with in the spider web or whatever Elizabeth Salander movie that he adapted that was weird in placement of Sony adaptations of that IP. This movie is obviously flawed. Film Twitter seems to be really mad about it. And I felt kind of like, am I not supposed to like this movie by like the general consensus when it comes to that cesspool? And I will completely say outright that Ian Holm looked terrible. I do appreciate what they were. I disagree. I think this is about Weyland Yutani Slavin and trying to escape that. No matter how naive or knee jerk and how that fucked this entire cast over. I don't know.
Oh, it's better than Prometheus.
Oh, for sure. And Covenant, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
I think it sits third in the Alien, for me, in the Alien pantheon.
I'd have to give that some serious thought because I actually do like Prometheus. So,
wow.
Yeah, I have come around on that movie quite a bit.
You're that person. Okay.
I am that person. Listen, I got excited. I mean, I was already really looking forward to this. And we can talk about some of the commentary that's come out of discussions about this movie. But I mean, for me, I thought the trailers looked really good. I thought it looked really promising. And then I saw a marketing video. I think it was on Instagram where they showed the years that the movies take place. Cause at this point I had no idea where in the timeline it fit in. And I'm like, Dan, it fits in between Alien and Aliens. This is going to be amazing. Dan's like, oh, this is going to be bad. I'm like, no, it looks good. It looks good. And admittedly, I think I was much, much higher on it as soon as I walked out of the theater, and literally Bill texted me as the credits were rolling. I mean, I took a snapshot. I was literally partway through credits and I'm like, this movie was amazing. And I sat with it since Friday and I'm like, okay, it's still really good. I am not detracting from my initial feeling that I really, really like this movie, but I can see now that I've stepped back a little bit, I'm like, okay, I see where it's problematic. But it still does not detract from the fact that it's really, really, really well made for the most part. The mm-hmm. third act is just weird. Like it feels like a totally different movie. Like the pacing is different. The cinematography looks different. Like the whole thing just feels like it's almost like, let's make Alien. And then at the end, they're like, but let's make Aliens. It's making an action movie. So I don't know. I have mixed feelings, but overall, I really did enjoy it. And like the first hour of this movie is so fucking good. Like out of this world good. Like the whole thing about like the planet, the mining planet, and like you say, Steve, like them trying to serve, like rescue themselves from like Yutani overlords. I'm mm-hmm. like, this is such genius, like world building from like a franchise that we already know and love, but we mm-hmm. haven't really looked at the size of things yet. I felt a little Total Recall, but I'm okay with that. I'm willing to let that go. It just looked so good. It was so well realized. The music is amazing. Like the score from Benjamin Wallfisher is just like chef's kiss. It's a beautiful continuation of the originals. There's so much to love in that first like hour that I'm kind of willing to let it slide. The fact that the second hour is a little bit it's not as good. So I'm still super high on this movie. I can't wait. I am going to go see it again next week.
Wow.
For reasons that we don't usually see things theatrically twice, but they're doing a screening with like a bunch of the tech team, including the prosthetics guys and the VFX team. And I'm like, I want to see all the behind the scenes shit. And I was so happy to see Alec Guinness's name in the credits, because he is really the guy, the alien guy, going back to, I think, 3. I don't think he did the second one. I think he's a bit too young for that. But he's really like the creature dude. And he's done a great job here. Legacy Effects is also super talented. So I can't wait. I can't wait to see it again. But overall, my initial feeling is I still really, really liked it, though I'm not quite as high on it as I was when I walked away immediately after the credit rolled.
All right, time to take it down a tad. Yeah.
Bring us down the pegs.
So you guys were right. The first hour is really good. It's really well paced. The acting is great. The story is really good. And then it becomes an exercise in how stupid decisions can be made, like incredibly quickly. Like these characters are stupid. Stupid. Also, a little bit of me going on a soapbox here. If you see how these things replicate, they replicate really quickly, I'd be like, you know what? Fuck this. I'm saving the world. We're blowing this shit up right now. Mm-hmm. They're not getting to Earth. No. Instead, everybody's got to be a goddamn hero. Mm-hmm. It just drives me nuts. And like, what if one of them's on in a crevice on the spaceship and now they brought it back to Earth? Congratulations. You just ruined the planet. Just me being an idiot. Yeah, it's a decent movie. It's not terrible, but it moves really quickly. It's a 2-hour movie, and I thought, oh, this is over already. That was a pretty quick film, actually. Mm-hmm. Third act is a little weird, but it's not bad. It's just not great. And I watched the trailer and I thought it might be great. I expected it to be better than this. And if you want a movie where people have to go against an irresistible force that is really like incredible, go and see Twisters. It's better than this.
I like Twisters a lot, like to the point where I've now seen it 3 times. Let's not talk about this. But I think like as I prefer this, like I think Romulus is a better movie for me, at least. Wow. Maybe not like technically, but for my tastes, I prefer to watch Alien Romulus, except I can't watch this with my nieces. So there's that.
But is it because Twisters doesn't have bullshit 0G swimming in it?
Well, yeah, there is that. Should we? Okay, I think we need to do this. We're going to
put I was just going to say how I liked that scene, but.
Yeah, I think it's safe at this point. I think, because the movie literally just opened on Friday, we can say we're going to get a little spoilerish for the next few minutes, because there is some, it's kind of cool, but also kind of stupid. Like the whole, let's kill the aliens in 0G so that the acid floats, and then let's swim through the acid. Like, seriously? I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm sorry, Steve. I really am. I'm a stickler for that kind of stuff.
That scene did not really work for me either.
No. But.
David Johnson is the story, I think, coming out of this, though.
Yeah.
I think so too.
And like, about fucking time, because maybe people will watch Rye Lane or watch Industry. The first couple seasons, because season 3 is now out. And it's a show that has been such a brilliantly written slow burn that nobody fucking pays attention to, because it's not Succession or House of the Dragon or something like that. But hopefully this might get some eyes on him, because he's really, really, really good in this one. Though in the playing at that IP sandbox, they give him a line that doesn't make any sense. Yes.
I know, like the fan service of that line is Chef's mm-hmm. kiss.
Yeah, but it doesn't. It doesn't make any sense in any shape or form for him to say that, because there's no weight behind it.
No.
Yeah. But I do like when they put the new chip over him, that switch. And I mean, because I always kind of love shit like that. That's why I love fucking Upgrade and all those. Yeah. Like anytime when someone has like a total momentum switch and they can become like kind of a different character, I'm all about that. But I mean, it ranks as like Fede's third good film, but I still like it a lot as an Alien film, because that franchise has been through the ringer. So to have a movie that I want to revisit again in that franchise that isn't the original two, I'm down. And Kaylee Spaney,
another good year.
Yeah.
I'm happy that Fede directed this and not Ridley Scott, because I think he probably would have ruined it.
Ridley absolutely would have ruined it. Speaking of Ridley, how are we worried about Gladiator?
No, because I'm not excited about it to begin with. Okay. I don't see it's not necessary.
Like, it isn't Gladiator necessary. It's largely.
Yeah,
it's largely been unnecessary since fans wanted it. It's been unnecessary.
Yeah, no, it's not. I mean, I love this cast. I'll mm-hmm. probably see it, but mm-hmm. I am expecting nothing. Mm-hmm. Like the trailers are they play the trailer again. It's so uninteresting.
I know. Is this also the year for like Fred Hechinger playing like against type roles? Because he's in Gladiator and he's in that Kraven, the Last Hunter, as well apparently. As the brother. I don't know. At least we got Thelma.
Which we can talk about later because I finally saw it.
But, I don't know math.
I don't know. I'm probably like, wishful thinking, but I would really, really love to see a movie like that first hour on a mining planet and just like life there. Just give me that for the next Alien movie then just throw the aliens in at the end or something. I don't know. I want more of that.
Our next Alien project is the series on Disney Plus next year, Alien Earth, with Timothy Oliphant and a bunch of other cast. And showrunner is a man by the name of Noah Hawley.
Ooh.
Yes. Ooh. Yes. Whose two other shows are not too shabby.
Yeah, but it's also on Disney. I don't know, man.
It's FX.
Yeah.
Which he did Legion for. So
yeah.
I don't know.
The first episode of Legion might be one of the greatest television shows I've ever seen.
It's so insane.
So good.
Yeah. That show takes a lot of big swings. I don't think it lands all of them, but I appreciate that he took the swings.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think more than even just that first episode, I think the first half of the season is pretty epic. And then it just kind of, did they even ever finish that? Like, it feels like that show was left on like a cliffhanger and we never went back to finish it. Or am I misthinking this?
I don't remember.
See, this is it. Like, I'm pretty sure we left partway through the story and they never bothered to go back to finish it. So, yeah.
That was like 10,000 movies ago.
This was how many Marvel things ago?
Yeah.
Lost track. So overall, I mean, my feeling is Alien Romulus plays really well. I think it's a fun time at the movies. We certainly had a really good time watching it. How do you guys feel? Is it worth the big screen experience?
Yes, I think so. Yes, I think especially the darkness that Fede is playing with, you should see it in theaters. And it's really great in that way. Do you know what the funniest thing about this whole this whole IP, and you thought that you would have had the answer by now, is what the fuck is the space jockey? You would have thought 7 movies in and Ridley came back to do 2 prequel movies as well, that we would have addressed this, but no, we've never addressed this.
Oh, and just for the record, Alien, Aliens, the rest of them, no.
I don't know. I have a soft spot for 3. 4 is a mess. Prometheus, I like. Covenant, eh.
I would still really love to give Fincher like 2 weeks to try to figure that film out.
Okay, but have you seen some of the new behind the scenes stuff that's come out? Like stuff that I have never seen before, including the dog in the alien costume. Which is just like, it's just ridiculous. It's so ridiculous. I don't think Fincher was ready to try to make that movie.
No. And plus, he absolutely hates the idea of doing that. So it's never going to happen.
Yeah, no. I still don't mind the Fincher cut. I don't even know. What did they even call that thing now? The cut that is on the quadrology is actually
it's a work print.
Oh, it is totally a
work. Yeah, print. and it's not even close to being finished.
But it's better than the theatrical cut.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Oh
man. The reason to watch that movie is Charles S. Dutton.
Yeah. Oh. don't know. I don't dislike that movie, but I agree. For me, it's actually, I think I prefer Aliens and then Alien and then probably Prometheus and then this. Maybe on a rewatch might change, but I never got around to rewatching anything in preparation. I think I've seen Alien and Aliens enough times at this point that I don't need to rewatch it for preparation for anything.
I actually hadn't seen Alien in a very long time and watched it last week, and that movie slaps.
Oh, yeah. It's so good. I will say I went to see this in ScreenX at Landmark. So I've done ScreenX at Cineplex out in Langley, and it was an interesting experience. I said, Dan, I don't think I would do this again. The screening that we wanted to see, the time that worked for us was only the ScreenX screening. So we went to Landmark in Surrey to see it. And I will pay money to see ScreenX at a Landmark cinema. The experience is actually different. I think in part because the theater is smaller. So you feel like you're even more immersed, and that the entire like opening 20 minutes, including like the studio logos and everything, are in ScreenX. And it just like almost immediately you're like, oh, this is different. It's pretty fucking cool. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience. I'm like, okay, I would do this again.
Just throwing it out. How much?
$15 for the ticket.
Oh, that's not bad, I guess.
That's not bad at all.
It was the same. It was the same as the laser. It was the same as the laser presentation. So,
yeah. Well, maybe I'll try it when I'm in Vancouver.
Yeah, I would, but I would honestly, like, having experienced both, I think the Landmark experience is far superior than the ones at Cineplex. Just because the auditorium is so much bigger, you just don't get that feeling. It was pretty awesome.
Nice. You're now banned from Cineplex, but great.
Listen, as long as nobody looks at my Landmark card as I walk into the IMAX screen at in Coquitlam, I'm okay. Look the other way, where it's coming. Because that screen is pretty fucking awesome. So yeah, I really like this movie. I thought it was very good. It was a lot of fun.
Don't listen to me. Action films, I'm snobby about. I'm not an action film guy. I'm sorry, I'm just not.
I did think it was funny though. A lot of the commentary I've seen in the last couple of days from like folks that are Alien fans that were like super stoked to see this that didn't love the movie as much, they're like, we didn't like the fan service. And I kind of just shake my head. I'm like, okay, wait, so you liked the fan service that he did for the Evil Dead movie, but you didn't like it here? You're gonna have to explain this to me in a little more detail, because I don't kind of understand, but okay. Mm-hmm. But it's nice to see that it's getting at least some positive reaction. I think Fetty's career is okay.
Yeah, I think so too. I think he's going to keep getting jobs. Even like I said, even though he made that Claire Foy, Elizabeth Salander film that didn't go anywhere, which has Sylvia Hawk, Sylvia, the one from Blade Runner, 2049. She's like the villain of the Did nobody saw this one?
I did not. I refused. Okay.
This is a real movie. It's the girl trapped in the spider web or whatever. I think
I may have seen it.
They made this movie in like 2017, 2018. They ignored the fact that David Fincher had made Elizabeth Salander movie. I feel like I'm living in a Mandela effect right now. Claire Foy instead plays Elizabeth Salander.
I did see this one. I just don't remember it.
Yeah. Instead of Daniel Craig, you have Sevier Gunnarsson from Borg McEnroe.
Yeah.
And Sylvia Hawks is incredible. Always. I dig her style. But it was just like a middle of the road movie. And I think it was probably the lowest of Fede's career at this point.
Mm.
Because I think he's been rocking it everywhere else.
Yeah. Hollywood likes to give him their horror legacy projects.
Yeah. At least he didn't turn into Andy Muschietti, so we're happy about that.
It part two.
Ugh. I'm going to decide to write this myself.
Oh, brother. Okay. Who wants to go next? What else have you guys been seeing? I haven't seen a lot, but I'm happy to go. Yeah. Bill and I were kind of talking about this before we started recording, but the abomination that is The Instigators. I don't know if it's an abomination. It's just not good. What is up with this movie? It's so not good. Everybody is better than this. Doug Liman is better than this. Matt Damon is better than this. Casey Affleck is better than this. Hong Chau is definitely better than this. And the rest of Hollywood that is in this movie is better than this.
It's so jumbled. It's so jumbled and just all over the place. Like even the actual heist itself, like that whole thing is just flat. Just a flat moment. And there's probably one of the worst CG moments I've seen on film this year from a movie that's apparently has a budget. And it's literally just a safe falling out of a window.
Oh, my God, that was terrible.
Oh, there's so much bad stuff.
It's a completely separate element than the actual film itself.
Did M. Night Shyamalan write this script?
Apparently, maybe Casey Affleck's taking lessons from him. I don't know.
Did Casey write this?
Yeah.
Co-wrote
it.
This is his baby. Co-wrote, produced. He talked to his wife to talk to Matt Damon's wife about Matt Damon being in the movie. Like the whole thing is. Yeah.
Matt Damon supposed to be in some kind of like vacation or something like that? And he keeps getting called back to do Air, which is good. He was going to take the break after Air, which is like, that's a nice thing to take a break after. And then Nolan calls him. So he goes and does Oppenheimer. And then he was supposed to take extended break. But you get Lyman is a streaming director for this movie.
Yeah.
It's a nothing special movie. And Damon came back to do this. Like,
he comes back when his friends call.
That's
all that it's coming down to at this point.
Then why did he need the wives to talk into it?
I don't know.
And that's so weird.
That was the story. I thought it was pretty funny, but I don't know. I was expecting something better from this. Even the basic concept of this is so ridiculous. Mm. It's just so stupid. Let's kidnap the quote unquote kidnap the shrink as cover. Like it just makes no sense. I don't know. It's not even funny. Like, that's what I don't understand. Like, it's supposed to be humorous. It's not even funny. It's just very, very bland. It's such an uninteresting movie.
It's like a classic straight guy and annoying dude that won't shut up.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, that said, Affleck and Damon have really great chemistry. Like, they're fun to watch together. There's nothing here. Like the script is just nothing. And most of their dialogue is just forgettable crap. They just kind of have this great camaraderie, but it's just such a stupid movie. I don't know.
No, like half of Hollywood is in this film. And, Ving Rhames is, I thought, pretty decent in it.
And they do such a big job to like lead him into the movie. It's like a whole like, who is this guy? Yeah. And then it's like a reveal of Ving Rhames, and then they do nothing with it.
The vehicle is a choice too. Like the
yes.
fucking tank thing he drives.
I was like, is this a thing that they actually use? Because I would not be surprised if they did.
Like, also, this is why we have to defund the police.
Right? This was my thought. I'm like, is this something that, you know, cops in Boston are actually driving around in? Because I wouldn't be shocked.
It's an ACAB movie.
Yeah. Paul Walker Hauser is like, maybe.
Highlight, though.
That whole thing in the house is fucking hilarious.
And getting blown off the porch. Like, that's funny. That his whole involvement is the best part of the movie. You can only watch his scenes and then throw the rest away, which just shows you the power of Paul Walker Hauser at this point, probably one of the most underrated dudes on screen right now.
And maybe one of Ron Perlman's worst performances of all time. Oh,
so bad.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Yeah.
And stop making Jack Harlow a thing.
Yeah.
Stop it.
So not good.
Yeah, Doug Liman made The Bourne Identity. How is this film so visually uninteresting?
I know. Do you know who's actually doing a lot of work in it that I can't hate? Is Michael Stuhlbarg.
Okay, and that final scene at the end with they should have been wearing boots. That's actually a pretty funny callback. That was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
I mean, they end up dead on their way to Canada because they weren't wearing winter boots. That was hilarious.
Have you ever been to Montreal?
It's like minus 45.
20 feet of snow.
Oh, okay. So it does have like a couple of key funny moments, but overall, it's just not a very funny.
Yeah.
At all. I finally caught up with Thelma, and you guys did not oversell this. This is so good. I have to admit, I was worried because I'm like, how is this possibly as good as everybody says it is, but it totally does. It's just like the most charming movie. And the thing is, it's so fucking relatable.
Yeah.
I have had that conversation with older people that don't really use computers about the X's and where to move the mouse. And I'm like, oh my God, this is like, remember, it's like recalling conversations with my parents where my mom is like, what's the mouse?
But to put these in an action tension scenario is brilliant.
It's just so brilliant. Funny. June Squibb and Richard Roundtree are so fun together. Parker Posey is hilarious. I don't know. This whole thing is just so charming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you guys did not undersell this. This movie is gold. It is gold. It is so enjoyable. It's such a fun watch.
June Squibb, action hero.
Oh, it's well, and that's the thing. Like when you say you're like, I can't even begin to picture what that looks like. And then you watch the movie and you're like, oh, this is so awesome. Like, I want to be her.
She does tactical roles.
Oh, it's so good.
It's like tactical stuff. It's hilarious. It's so funny.
It's such a
somebody so deserving of it too.
Yeah, no, it's such a smart movie and so much heart, and the performances are wonderful. Highly, highly, highly recommended. Like I said, you guys did not undersell this. It's very, very good. I watched Daddy-O. This is Dakota Johnson and Sean Penn in a cab together for an hour and a half. I love this movie. I did look at some of the reviews after I saw it, and I was like, okay, I can kind of see where some of the problems arise from. But as a woman, I'm like, okay, I completely relate with this woman who is going through this moment. And she just happens to be in the back of this car having this conversation with this driver in the longest ride from JFK into downtown New York. Like 90 minutes it takes through traffic. Admittedly, I don't know. Like, the performances are great. Sean Penn has just always kind of rubbed me the wrong way. I don't know. There's just something kind of icky about him. I can't put my finger on what it is. He just doesn't sit well with me. But I thought Dakota Johnson was great. And I think Christy Hall's script is really, really good. It gives you a picture of this. Like, I do have issues with the fact that you never really find out what the name of these characters are. I think you find out what the name of Sean Penn's character is, but they actually credit Dakota Johnson as Girly in the credits, which makes no fucking sense and is kind of demeaning. But I thought that the script itself was really, really well written. I like the fact that this character is not flat. She has a lot of dimension, considering that you only learn about her basically from her conversation with a stranger in a car and the text messages that she's exchanging with this guy on her phone. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really, really well done. And I'd like to see more from Christy Hall. I'm curious to see what else she has next. This is kind of weird because though, like, it's literally the two people sitting in a car. So it's, it can only ever be so interesting, like visually. So that doesn't really give you much to go on, but like as a script, I thought this was really well done and the performances are outstanding from both of them, even though Sean Penn still creeps me out. So I would say definitely worth a look.
Yeah. It's on my list.
That was gonna be my question. Like, the shooting in a cab, kind of, what is it like a two shot, or is it like just constantly panning back and forth?
No, it's a bit of both.
Yeah,
it's a bit of both, and there's a lot of sort of cutting between their conversation with each other, and like you never learn anything about Sean Penn's character other than through their conversation. Like, you never get to see him interacting on his own. It's really about her, so you get basically her and Sean talking about whatever. And then every once in a while, they'll break to her just interacting with her phone. And so that can be like a bit weird. It's definitely not, I can't remember the one, I can see it. I can't remember what it's called. The one with, oh my gosh, my mind has gone blank. The dude driving, he's driving the entire time.
Locke?
Yeah, the Tom Hardy movie.
Yeah, the Tom Hardy movie. It's not, it doesn't have like that, where that movie is like you're on one character the entire time and it's super tension filled. It doesn't have that energy, but I still thought that the character interactions and what you learn about her are really, really interesting. And I would watch it just for that. And the performances are really good, but I'd be curious to see what Christy Hall can do with like a budget and actually like, you know, having more locations. It's not Verity. I think that's still a far superior movie if you're talking about like a performance in a one room location and like setting up a thriller and like having some like real like emotional heaviness, but it's pretty solid. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Check it out.
The Convert. This is Leeta Mahori's new film with Guy Pearce. Guy Pearce plays a former soldier who turned priest who goes to New Zealand to preach to the first British colonizers. Teori Ngati Melbourne also stars. She's really, really fantastic. It's kind of like a Pocahontas story in New Zealand. So it has, I think, varying weight depending on, I think, your perspective. I thought it was really beautiful. And the performances are really, really good. The story itself, it's not something that we've never seen before, but it is a different perspective because we've never seen it out of New Zealand. And this is very much a New Zealand production. So I do appreciate that. But yeah, Jin Luan's cinematography is like spectacular. It's New Zealand at its most beautiful. Like the opening 15, 20 minutes are just like fucking amazing. Like I wish I could have seen it on the big screen because it is like big, beautiful, lush. It's gorgeous. And Guy Pearce, we haven't seen a lot of him the last couple of years. He's good. He's always really, really good. And he gives a really great performance here. It's a bit on the long side, but I think overall it actually really works. So I would recommend it. It's a light recommend for me. Wildcat, Ethan Hawke and Maya Hawke's love letter to Flannery O'Connor, an author I am not familiar with. Again, this has varying appeal. I thought she's an interesting character, and Maya Hawke's performance is really, really good. The movie's just kind of a mess. It's sort of all over the place, and it's dealing with some interesting themes of, like, you know, you have this woman who is clearly not fully there. She clearly needs, she has some, like, mental issues that she's dealing with. She has these religious things that she's dealing with. And she's also like this sort of cutting edge author at a time when women weren't really like allowed to do anything other than be housewives. So it has a lot of different things working for it. I just overall, I found it kind of messy. Ethan Hawke's a really great filmmaker, but this is doesn't fully work. But I give a credit because Maya Hawke is excellent. And they do a pretty good job of bringing this to life. And the fact that it's like this passion project from a father and daughter, I can't look beyond that. I really like the Hawks. So I think I'm giving it like extra points, extra bonus points, maybe an extra star because I really like the both of them. I don't know if it's really super deserving of it, but I think it's okay.
I love Ethan. I love Maya. I love Tony. I love the Hawks.
Yeah, pretty much. this is exactly me right now. Like, I'm sure Tony Hawk isn't like related familiarly, but yeah, I am all about the Hawks, all of them. And finally, last night we watched Fly Me to the Moon, which is, I don't know. It's okay, I guess. It's kind of weird. Like, it has this very, it's clearly playing into like the 60s style, like the transitions are kind of like very retro, and the music is pretty cool, and Johansson and what's his face have zero chemistry. Like zero chemistry. Like they're on screen together and you're like, I think you guys are supposed to like each other, maybe. There's just nothing happening between the two of them. It's very, very weird. And I didn't know Greg Beltrami was directing movies now. Like, I've always thought of him as the CW DC guy.
Life as We Know It was his with Josh Duhamel and Katherine Heigl. And then he did a movie in 2016 with Nick Robinson called Love, Simon that got actually a series update as well for two seasons.
So tell me this isn't weird. The guy that directs, well, that executive produces and ushers home all of the DC titles for CW is also directing romantic comedy.
Yeah. I think he also like he still does DC theatrical because I think that Blue Beetle was partially written by him.
I could see that.
So he still plays around. It's weird.
It's fine. Like, it's a very glossy movie. It's very pretty. It's really, 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 really long, like way overly long. And the story is kind of fun. Like, it's an interesting take on like the space race and like the fake footage. And it's hilarious that Woody Harrelson is playing another Nixon sap when he just did that in that Watergate series. I said to him, this is like a new thing, which is the weirdest because he is like the most left wing of left wingers. So it's just kind of like this weirdness. It's okay. It's
Jim Rash all day though.
It's very forgettable.
I love Jim Rash, the director.
It's
because of Community.
He is maybe the highlight because he is just so over the top. It's just so forgettable. Like, I can't believe a movie with these two stars is just like, it's Channing Tatum and Scarlett Johansson. Like, there should be something memorable here. It's just so forgettable.
Well, hopefully Blink Twice is his turnaround.
It certainly looks like it. I saw him and Zoe Kravitz in the Criterion Closet and they've got it.
Yeah.
They got chemistry. I'm like, these two are together, aren't they? I had to look it up. I'm like, oh, clearly they do.
Oh, yeah, they're together. Oh,
he was just talking about them watching movies together over Christmas with dad. So, you know, this is a thing. But
So I actually heard on a podcast that an earlier version of that script actually had Stanley Kubrick in the film.
Which is the conspiracy theory, right?
Yeah.
The conspiracy theory is that Kubrick was the one to quote unquote direct the fake moon landing, and they make reference to it like throughout. They're like, well, maybe we should have hired Kubrick
because
the director is so difficult. But it's like there has some fun gags, and if you're kind of familiar, like Dan is really into like the space race, like this is totally his jam, like conspiracy theories, the whole thing with faking the moon landing. Like, this is for him, this movie was. Like, the concept was great, and the same thing. Like, we both just felt that it was just very bland and really forgettable. Like, it has some cool ideas, and it has some fun moments, and it does have, like, some Callbacks to like the real marketing blitz that happened at NASA during the 60s because they were trying to raise money for NASA and the space race. But like so much of it is just bland drama that the whole thing is just kind of forgettable. Not highly recommended. And that's all I've seen. It's not a lot.
All right.
No. Do you want to go see?
Yeah, sure. I can rock. So I checked out National Anthem. This is the debut of a writer-director named Luke Gilford. And it stars Charlie Plummer. And there's a general rule. If you see Charlie Plummer's name on the credits, you watch that fucking movie. And I really, really dug this. He leads the film. He's kind of like a guy in his early 20s who has the partying mom at home. And he's just trying to support the family. But he's like a day worker where he just kind of jumps in the back of a pickup truck to go to a construction site. And then one day a pickup truck that he jumps in the back of goes to like a queer rodeo, like a queer ranch that prepares for rodeos. And he finds his people and kind of his like awakening there. And it's so beautiful, especially to see a queer story against like the iconic, like, frontier Americana backdrop, something you wouldn't generally associate with it. And I think it's so damn well done. The ending, I love the third act of this film a lot. I thought it was beautiful. So I really dug that one. I finally got a chance to check in with Maxine, and fuck, I was disappointed. Yeah, I was so disappointed. Not to say that Mia Goth isn't fantastic, because she is really, really great, and especially when she gets to play with the wheelhouse of Maxine, but that third act doesn't work at all, like at all. And this was like Ty's like a chance to like play in that like William Lustig like maniac style movie, and he doesn't at all. He is this film compared to the other two feels so drawn back and sanitized in a lot of way, even though you have like a genital destroying scene and a few other like a shotgun head explode and all this kind of stuff. But just nothing about this movie is shocking or interesting. And it's just like a horrendous, horrendous letdown. I was so, so disappointed by this film. Cuckoo has a very interesting film. I'm not super familiar with Hunter Schafer because I'm not really... I haven't gone down the road of Euphoria at all, except for a couple episodes. But she's fascinatingly good in this film. And Dan Stevens pulling a little like German weirdo in this movie, I thought was really interesting. Tillman Singer, the guy that made this film, he made a film called Lose that was on Shudder a few years ago, which was a really interesting film that I really liked. This is a step down from that, just because it's, I don't know if the weirdness of this film always works. I think the first time you see kind of the antagonistic element of this film, that it's almost comical. And yeah, I really don't know how I feel about this film in the end. Chloe and I, on our show, we're kind of wrestling with it, and we're still like kind of like in the middle of the road on it.
A lot of buildup and then a really not interesting third act.
Yeah. It just feels like it's going towards something crazy, and then just, it doesn't.
Yeah. Go crazy. Go absolutely batshit nuts. And it doesn't do it. Like, I'm like, okay, Dan Stevens is speaking German and this should be really cool. And it's fine. But it's just like, I thought the third act was going to be nuts.
Yeah. And it just kind of
wasn't.
It just kind of peters out.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's just get this one over with. Borderlands, I think, is the worst film of the year. And this is... I'm wrestling with this in Madame Web, just because Madame Web is full. It is like one of the worst put together films of the year. But like Borderlands is like in almost, I feel like almost like intentionally bad. And like we said on the last episode, like Craig Mazin didn't want anything to do with this film. And he had, from what I'm hearing, 3 years ago, like a really great script that Eli Roth had rewritten by two guys that weren't him and then rewrote it himself and made probably one of the most unlikable theatrical experiences I've been to in a very, very, very long time.
Did you know it has two directors?
Who is the second director of it?
Tim Miller.
Oh, who came in for reshoots. Yes.
Came in for reshoots because Eli was busy.
Was it that third act?
I don't know.
The third act feels completely different than the rest of the movie. None of it's good, though. And I saw on Twitter that Eli Roth has a granny fetish. He clearly did take two younger characters in Lilith and Tannis and cast Kate Blanchett and Jamie Lee Curtis for reasons unknown.
I mean,
I don't know why Kate Blanchett's slumming it in this movie. I have zero clue why she's doing this movie.
I mean, the fact that nobody did any press for this thing and it has all of these actors in it was already like a red flag.
Yeah, we salute you for your service, Steve.
Thank you. It was that, or it ends with us were the early screenings, and I opted for Borderlands.
Oh, the drama around it ends with us, which I still haven't seen, and I probably won't see theatrically now, has been eye opening to see.
Yeah, it's been crazy. It's been crazy, but yeah, I don't even think I cracked a smile the whole film. I just looked at my buddy and be like, what the fuck? Like so many times, like, what the fuck? I saw a small little 3-person indie film called Good One, written, directed by India Donaldson, about a weekend backpacking trip with a guy played by James LaGross, who is nice. Like MVP James LaGross. I love that guy. His queer daughter and his best friend, who always seem to like one up each other in that kind of toxic masculine sort of way. A slight slow burn film that's kind of slowed the entire film, but still really works as a great character piece about three people that really like don't know each other. And some awkward conversational moments punctuate it. I like India Donaldson as a writer. I think she's all of her stuff seems fairly natural and doesn't feel like it has any of that gloss to it. So I ended up really digging Good One quite a bit. What else am I got here? Oh my God. Okay. The Union, which is what if we needed a secret agent to save the world, so we just grabbed a steelworker dude from New Jersey.
Is this
and it's Mark Wahlberg?
Yeah.
Holy shit. Like, I mean, the movie is clearly just a vehicle so Wahlberg and Halle Berry can lean into the cliched things that audiences pick up and like from them. But that's all it is. It has got no clear indication of style or anything. There's a couple of good fight scenes, but nothing consistent in this movie. And it's clearly leaning into the more restricted dialogue, which is odd when it comes to Mark Wahlberg, because I thought he was like going faith-based or something like that with his career. Besides this ridiculous shit thing that he's doing with Mel Gibson later in this year, which they won't even say Mel Gibson's name in the trailer, which is just hilarious too. When you're like, from the director of Braveheart and Hacksaw Ridge, who did those movies? I don't know. I've told forgot, just like I don't know who wrote Harry Potter. So yeah, I don't know. The Union just doesn't work. My penguin friend Jean Reno as a heartbroken fisherman who saves a penguin that washes up on the shore covered in oil from an oil spill, and it ends up coming back to him like year after year. And it's based on a true story. It's super like cheesy looking. Some of the CG doesn't exactly work in it, but the penguin actor is like phenomenal. Like, way to go, little pengy. But it's super like and manipulative in the way that those animal movies are. So if you got a little bit of a soft heart, it'll probably penetrate.
And then Natalie Portman shows up at the end and shows, you showed me how to shoot, and then shoots a penguin.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
The be end amazing. Credits.
Well, that's what's really funny about Jean Reno doing a movie like this. Like, I know he did stupid shit like Pink Panther, and he's made, or Just Visiting, and he's made like choices in his career. But like, when you think Jean Reno, you think, yeah, Leon the Professional, you think Ronin, you think The Crimson Rivers. It's just like Mission Impossible. Like you think, you don't think of My Penguin Friend. So yeah, it kind of blew me away. I watched Jackpot, which is Paul Feig's latest movie. Him definitely leaning towards the spy side of his filmography, with John Cena and Awkwafina. I know the world's sick of Awkwafina. I don't think I'm there yet, but I'm also a guy that's not sick of Taika Waititi, so demonize me there for sure. I get it. You can tell this that because Paul Feig said he wanted to make a Jackie Chan movie, and it does feel a lot like a lot of John Cena's action is like on the fly reactive stuff that really does remind me of Jackie Chan stuff. Just the story really isn't there. The action's great, and there's some really funny stuff with Machine Gun Kelly as himself, which sounds stupid.
Take that back.
I don't know. It was okay. And then last night I watched Between the Temples with Jason Schwartzman, and I saw another reviewer, Brian Tilerico, say that middle-aged Schwartzman might be my favorite, and I'm leaning towards agreeing with him because I'm really enjoying middle-aged Schwartzman. He helps with bat mitzvahs in the singing department. I forget what he's called again. An older lady played by Carol Kane comes to him and says that I want to do my bat mitzvah at this point in my life. So they end up forming this relationship that starts to get him through the grief of his former relationship. And I thought it was really sweet. Like, it has a really great heart to it. And the chemistry between Schwartzman and Carol Kane is fantastic. Like, and there's something so idiosyncratic about that woman's acting that I really, really love. So it's a film that nobody's going to find. It's going to just like drop on some streaming service eventually, and people are going to discover it then. But I think it's worth the find.
Actually,
sounds like a reverse Cha Cha Real Smooth.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Which I still haven't seen. It's good on movie.
That's a great really movie. I know.
Definitely. But Nathan Silver actually made a movie that I watched years ago at VIFF, Soft in the Head, which I really liked. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen anything from him since. I didn't even, I was looking it up. I'm like, oh, that name sounds familiar. I've seen something with this guy.
Is the framing of that movie really close as well?
Yes.
Yeah, yes. That's the thing about this movie too. It's almost like, so the framing is so close, but then does this beautiful pan out in the final shot that I was just like, ooh, way to go, buddy, way to go. I almost like, it would be like a stand up and clap type thing. I was like, yeah, man, that's how you bring us out of the story. The more I get beyond that movie, the more I like it.
Awesome. Cool. Yeah. Mr. Bill,
never even heard of it, to tell you the truth.
No.
That's great. We've already talked about a bunch of the ones I've already watched so I'll just do the few that I didn't. There's a horror movie called Oddity that Steve's gonna love.
Yes.
It's really cool. This woman, she's a medium, and she's trying to find out how her sister was killed in this like abandoned like country house, and she has thoughts. So she goes to the house with a really creepy wooden doll, and shit happens, and it's creepy. It's really creepy. There's a couple, the jump scares are great, and the acting is really great, and the doll freaked the shit out of me. Like, it was a couple scenes with the doll are really creepy. I hate dolls. Don't like them. this movie rules. It's on Shudder pretty quick. Yeah. You're gonna dig it, Steve.
Yes, I'm excited.
Yeah, I really like that one. I saw Kneecap.
Yes, saw
last episode. It's good. I thought it might be a little funnier. But it's a lot more serious than I thought it would be. There's a lot of stuff going on in that film. It's quite timely, actually.
It's super anti-censorship.
Yeah,
it's totally. Like that's the drive of the film.
Yeah,
and like protecting our roots.
Yeah, and just how they refuse to speak English. It's pretty awesome.
And Fassbender, so good. So
yeah, good. there's a scene with Fassbender where he shows up and just classes the place up. He walks into an alleyway and you're like, oh shit, Michael Fassbender's here.
Yeah, he has that air to it. I don't know. There's certain people and you're just like, they have an aura, and he's always has it. There's no diminish on it.
And as Steve said last episode, like, he didn't even know about the music and wasn't into it. But I think the music's decent. Like, it's I'm not really a rap guy, but it's not bad. I don't have a clue what they're saying, but it's it's great. The acting is not bad. I don't know if they're professional. I'm guessing they're not.
No, they're not.
Never done anything before, and they're quite good. It's you know, Train Spotting esque at times, but there's nothing wrong with that. That movie ran so people could copy it. But whatever, who cares? It's still a pretty good film. I didn't mind it at all. And the last one that I saw is super harsh. It's called Sugar Cane. It's a documentary on residential schools.
Ooh.
It's from BC, where we're from, and the director, Julian Brave Noise Cat, it's his family. His dad doesn't really know his childhood because it was or who his parents are, because he was like left in a box because I guess a priest got his mom pregnant, and he does a blood test to see what his heritage is, and he's half indigenous and half Irish Scottish, because the priest was Irish Scottish. And it's like the most compellingly gross scene of a film I've seen in a very long time. Like, I was
holy fuck,
it was terrible. The movie is really harsh, and I wish it was a little bit better made, but it's pretty essential. The really scary thing is my audience sort of had no clue about residential schools, and they were I had no idea. Like, where the fuck have you been?
Yeah, no doubt.
Like,
since just, like 2020 least, it's been in your face.
And it's brutal. They show footage of them doing like deep ground scans of like the areas where they think the bodies are, and it's just it's hardcore. It's playing in Vancouver at Van City this week. So if you're in Vancouver, you have a chance to see it.
The beautiful new Van City Theater.
Yeah, I heard it's very nice.
Yeah.
With Dolby Atmos.
Yeah.
And laser projection.
When I pick up my pass, fingers crossed. When Chloe and I pick up our passes, also fingers crossed. I want to show her that the theater for sure.
But yeah, other than that, that's all I've watched. We talked about the rest of the stuff, so that's it.
So what's coming?
I talked about some of the stuff last episode because I thought we were recording later, but The Crow.
Yeah, I got my ticket. I'm not too enthused about it, but yeah.
I got my ticket. I don't know. I read an article earlier this week about, because I mean, in addition to the fact that The Crow is kind of like the seminal film from the 90s, it was also a seminal soundtrack from the 90s. And I read that article and then I listened to my vinyl, which I'm so proud. I can't tell you how proud I am of my vinyl. And then I rewatched the trailer for that because I played in front of Alien. And I'm like, okay, so it's not The Crow that I want to see. Like, it's not the movie I remember. That's not to say it's probably not okay. It feels like it's mismarketed. I can't put my finger on it, but something about it just feels off. And I don't quite know what it is. I don't think they've captured the essence of what The Crow is. I could be wrong, but
The one trailer feels like it's the third trailer in, and like they've already shown you a trailer for it.
Yeah. It's weird. And the marketing has been weird. Like the interviews with both Skarsgård and Twigs, just Something about it is just off. I'm hoping it's okay, because I don't want to, like, I like The Crow a lot. Like, that movie was a part of me being who I am, but I don't know. This just, it feels so forgettable. And
I know, but like, somebody watched that trailer and said, nailed it.
Right? Like, it just, it feels so off.
Also that week, the week of August 23rd, Blink Twice. We talked about it a little bit earlier.
Yep. I don't think I'll be getting that one.
Oh, because I was going to say that should be our movie.
No, the other one, though, I'm getting a screener, which I think Bill's going to say right now.
Indeed. I'm seeing it on Friday after one of the films Steve talked about. Was that Good Ones? I'm seeing that. Strange Darling.
Yes.
Yes. I'm really looking forward to this one. Everybody I know who's seen it said it's incredible, so I can't wait. Has 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes, which is pretty rare.
It's cinematography by Giovanni Ribisi.
Yeah, I know. I like how they show that in the trailer, like, very prominently. Like,
I know.
We're really proud of this.
Because he's definitely a producer, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That I'm okay with that being the pick, because I get to see it, so.
Cool. August 30th, some Megan like AI movie called Afraid.
The trailer is hilarious. It's so funny. What is the reveal going to be in this movie? Do you want to see what I really am? Well, what is it going to be? What is it going to be? Aliens or something? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's really the kitchen sink of things that you could throw at this.
Yeah. There will be a twist. It's going to be hilarious.
I feel like it's not. It potentially it could be not so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think John Cho, though. And so. Plus, I don't think any of us thought Megan was going to be good.
No.
No, exactly. And that was a shocker. So
that movie's fun.
And that movie's great.
The 20th anniversary of Shaun of the Dead. I've probably seen that movie 100 times. Probably don't need to see it again. But, you know, if it's playing, maybe I'll see it. A new horror-ish movie called Out Come the Wolves. From Adam McDonald, who made the really rad Backcountry.
Backcountry is killer.
Backcountry is really good.
It's got a really great bear mauling scene.
Yeah.
Really great one.
This one's with wolves.
Yeah. I'm Missy Peregrine again. So yeah, I'm in.
I'm all in. That movie's going to rule.
I have a screener, I think, already, too.
Nice. And in case we push it a little further, September 6th, Beetlejuice, don't say the third one.
Yeah, because September 6th is my birthday. So I'm like, this is my birthday movie this year. I don't know if I wanted this for my birthday. I'm not sure. Especially like gauging how Tim Burton's filmography in the last 20 years.
There's a movie coming out on your birthday that you're going to love. So.
Okay.
Beetlejuice, I think it's gonna be could be fun, but when was the last good Tim Burton movie?
It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a long time. A movie called The Front Room. Have you heard about this?
With Brandy?
Do you know who directs it?
No.
The Eggers brothers. Robert's brothers.
Oh yeah, I'm in.
Friends.
I'm
Robert. In. Robert has brothers,
and it's A24.
Yeah, so. Max and Sam. And Sam Eggers. We'll see. I'm intrigued.
Brandy versus her racist old grandma-in-law.
I thought this looked amazing.
Yeah. All right. I'm down. I'm so down. And why Brandy? I don't care. Let's just do this. I'm down.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Welcome back to the genre, Brandy.
Yeah, right.
It's been a long time.
It has been
since I Know What You Did Last or
Three Decades.
I still know what you did last summer.
3 decades.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
On Netflix is a film called His Three Daughters that stars the Queen, Carrie Coon, Natasha Lyonne, and Elizabeth Olsen. So that's
right? Sold.
Yeah, I'm all over that. It played at Toronto last year. Supposedly it got really good reviews. So
You know, and it's going to get called a Netflix film as soon as it comes out. And that's what really bothers me about, like, even like they call May, December a Netflix film. It's like, fuck, are you? Yeah.
There should be an asterisk that says acquired.
Fucking kill it. Kidding me? Solnir's movie should be out.
That's the one I was going to say next. That's Steve's birthday movie, Rebel Ridge.
Yeah.
Love the trailer.
There it is. There it is. Looks really I'm excited. Good. Excited for that one.
Yeah. It, who doesn't like a good revenge film? I love it.
Are we getting like a Blue Ruin
again? Oh, I hope so.
It looks very violent. And
Where's Macon in this this movie?
Making movies that aren't getting released. He directed Toxic Avenger, and that movie's supposedly never getting released. So
it makes me so sad, especially to know that Macon Blair is the guy that was trying to get it to us. And I know that he has a love and reverence for it. I can't imagine what he made and what would stop people from wanting us to see it.
And weirdly, Red Rooms is opening in the US.
Yes.
That's so weird. Yeah,
September 6th. Yeah. I've been tracking this story. So it was picked up by Utopia Distribution last year, and they're finally releasing it. It opens in New York on September the 6th, and then they have like a national rollout following that. So hopefully people will finally get to see it and eventually be available on Blu-ray. It is fucking hard to find.
Which is hilarious because I have a Blu-ray of it. But
Yes. The Out of Plymouth Blu-ray. I'm telling you, Bill, that movie, we're going to be fucking millionaires.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the director made those discs himself.
I am with you. I am 100%. I like totally believe that is exactly what happened.
Yeah, in case anybody hasn't heard of Red Rooms, that movie is incredible.
Best movie of last year.
I was going to say, if I'm not mistaken, Marina's number one film of last year. My number one film of VIFF last year. It's spectacular, and it's super unsettling, and you've kind of seen nothing like it. No. And it doesn't. And I love that it doesn't explain shit.
The new poster is fantastic. The trailer is great. The
upside down face thing.
Yeah, awesome. Like Utopia is doing a great job with the marketing. I really, really hope that people get to see it because that movie is chef's kiss.
Yeah,
so good.
So we're doing John Woo's The Killer. Okay, cool.
I don't think any of us will want to acknowledge that one exists when it comes out.
Yeah. So what is the selection at this
point? Strange Darling would be
sure.
Sweet.
I can go with that. I don't. I honestly have like no attachment to any of the titles, so I will go with whatever you guys want to see.
If for some reason you can't see Strange Darling, Marina. Maybe Beetlejuice or the Jeremy Saulnier film.
I am on the fence about Beetlejuice. I have so much love for the first one. And like you guys say, it's been diminishing returns for the last couple of years. I don't know, man. I love myself. I love the original so much. Nothing about the remake or the sequel or whatever they want to fucking call this looks good, to be honest. Sigh.
But yeah, we'll figure it out.
I think Strange Darling is, I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I'm assuming it'll open wide enough that I'll get to see it. So I'm
okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But I'm sure, you know, we'll figure it out. But it most likely will be Strange Darling.
I've been waiting for this film for a while, so I can't wait.
Where can folks find you between now and our next episode?
I am Bill Harris. I am on Twitter and Letterboxd at SoundJam69. Thanks for listening. Have a good week or two.
Steven needs to go last. You can find me at TheMarina2 on Instagram, and I am on Letterboxd at TheMarina, and I've been very good about updating my Letterboxd and actually responding to comments, so that's been awesome. That's probably the best place to find me for movie-related stuff. And last, but definitely not least, Steve.
You can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, and Threads at The Steve Will Dead. You can find me on my website, stevestebbing.ca. I do a show there every week on YouTube with my daughter Chloe called What the Hell Should I Watch? It comes out every Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time. I'm also on Tremble, the horror podcast with Kurt and Taylor. The last episodes we did were just this morning, actually, on the original Hitcher from 1986, Killer Rutger Hauer film. Mm-hmm. And Jeepers Creepers, a film made by a pedophile. Just got to put that out in Front Street and say, fuck Victor Silva forever, forever and ever. And I'm also now on The Late Shift with Shane Hewitt, Fridays at 8 p.m. Eastern time in Toronto area on News 1010. But then it also gets rebroadcast across the Bell Media system over the weekend following. And, yeah, that's it.
Awesome.
And I am not Melissa, at Melzy Tweets, I think. Yeah. She will be back.
She will be back. She will be back. And you can find show notes to everything we talked about today at atcpod.ca, and we'll be back a couple of weeks with another show. So until then,
hack the planet.